The Fan on Demand. When he beats the bushes for the story, he beats the crap out of them. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
There you go. It's never a good thing when one of your sources gets fired. Yeah, I tipped my hand in that one, didn't I? Frank Wren, general manager of the Atlanta Braves, let go. No, Neil Huntington's safe. My ex-Expos farm director / assistant GMs. We're down by one. Damn. Oh, yeah, we still got Duquette and Neil Huntington, so we're gold. Oh, and that guy in Toronto, what's his name? Anyhow. Yeah, Travis is running through the names. Omar Minaya is somebody's senior advisor or something like that. Welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Guess what? The Leafs start their exhibition season tonight. I can catch it on Leafs TV. They'll be playing the Flyers in London. Oh, and by the way, we got to add this again. Gary Bettman will be speaking to the Canadian club today regarding the state of the NHL. And we will be carrying that speech streaming live on sportsnet.ca at 12:30. Pardon me? Travis McKenzie, my producer, was trying to tell me that it will be George Strombolopoulos talking to Gary Bettman. Unfortunately, Travis mispronounced Strombo's name and it came out Strombolopoulos. You got it right the first time. You'll have to learn that one. We may be talking about George Strombolopoulos a little bit when hockey season starts. So, anyhow, I don't know if Gord Stellick, who's co-host of the Leafs Nation pre- and post-game, will be down at the Canada Club for this. But I know that he's joining us in the Jeff Blair Show. Did you get an invite to this lunch?
I did not. They'll be hard pressed to be more entertaining than Tim Leiwicki was at Ryerson the other week, though.
Oh my God!
Yeah.
Talk about the gift that keeps on giving.
I know. Listen, you know, funny part is, you know, Gary Bettman is the corporate Gary Bettman, but Strombolopoulos has always had a real positive relationship and friendship with guys like him and Bill Daly and John Collins and all those guys from the NHL office. So, I mean, they are kind of strange bedfellows. If you think of Gary Bettman and George Strombolopoulos or Strombopopopopoulos, as Travis calls them. But there's a history of being friends for a number of years, which, you know, with Ron McLean, it was a little bit dicey the last couple of years with him and Gary. So there's an interesting synergy there.
Yeah, using the phrase Gary Bettman and bedfellows in the same sentences.
Bad choice.
It just raises all sorts of disturbing images. Back to the topic at hand. I open up the newspapers on the weekend. Well, actually, don't open them. I go online and read them. Anyhow, I go online and read them. And you know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing a Leafs assistant coach quoted at length. This is an organization that used to, you know, put the cone of silence over their assistant coaches. Yet, you know, Peter Horacek's everywhere. I gassed up on Sunday, and I half expected him to be the guy filling my tank up. The hell's going on here?
I found that, certainly a change. You're right. You're right about that, Jeff. Because Dave Farish was a guy that I was with the Leafs when he played with the Leafs, and he was a vocal guy as a player. And then when he came here as Randy Carlyle's assistant, you never heard from him at all. Mm-hmm. And that was their place. And I don't know how it works exactly, why he has the blinkers off to do it. I think if you're hired by Brendan Shanahan, Dave Nonis, but I think ultimately Shanahan would have put the stamp of approval there, then, you know, the right guys are behind you. And, you know, maybe that's the reason. I mean, Randy Carlyle got stripped of his assistance, not at his own behest. And two guys I'm really big on in both Spot and Horacek. I mean, Horacek certainly cut his teeth in the minors, assistant coach with a solid national organization, and I thought did a real solid job in a no-win situation in Florida. So if I'm Randy, I would welcome that, because that's part of the job that Randy's always struggled to deal with is the media and other things. And, you know, maybe it gives Randy Carlyle a chance where he has to, you know, really make some hay, because let's face it, his situation would be tenuous to coach, to implement his programs, to do whatever he wants. It's quite an interesting change in the first week.
Gord Stellick joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. We're also seeing a lot of emphasis being placed on a new defensive system, which, you know, Peter Horchak was on this show, I want to say like a month ago, and he talked about how he had some of his ideas, some of his defensive ideas. I mean, God knows the Leafs needed, at least at times, a lot of times last year, Gord, didn't look like a team that had any comprehension or any understanding about what they'd be able to do defensively. But my question to you is, this is essentially the same group that the Leafs had last year, with the exception of Roman Pollock and Stefan Robidun. Carl Gunnarsson is now gone. Do you think that this is a group of defensemen that are good enough to carry out sort of an overhaul of the team's defensive strategy? Is there enough talent there to do that?
Well, I think there is. And you mentioned, you didn't mention a key guy, I know, because he's not new, but say in a Cody Franson, who's
right,
kind of been the bellwether of, you know, why is he playing versus when he plays well, he does a decent job and gives us lots of hits. But he seemed to be a guy that especially struggled. Gunnarsson was a guy that struggled last year after being rather steady. And of course, then you mentioned the two kids in let's face it, in Riley and Gardner, who are going to be a part of the future. So you do have the personnel there. And it's, you know, as much as we go back a year and a half to that game 7 in Boston and go, boy, what if? Well, in a lot of ways, that showed, that was the tip of the iceberg, that third period, and what carried on in an 82-game regular season last year. And I don't know, because they defied the odds and got off to a good start and relied on the goaltending, that they just wouldn't invest or buy into the program about playing that kind of team defense. But certainly at the end, you're right about it. And there's no mysteries about a breakout. I mean, it's not like Horchak or Spot or, you know, Randy Carlyle went to some communist country and found a new system in the offseason. It's simple execution of whatever plan they're going to do, because whatever it was, they didn't prioritize it. They just didn't buy into it. And ultimately, it was their undoing last year.
It really seemed to me last year, Gord, as if, and you know, we're not in the room when Randy Carlyle's talking to the players or anything, but I watched this team defensively, and I was left with the impression that somebody clearly wasn't doing a good enough job of explaining things to the players, because there were times where they were so bad defensively that it was beyond what you'd expect in the NHL. I mean, everybody's going to have a bad game, and not every team is going to be great defensively, but there were some games where they just didn't have a clue defensively. And that made me think that because I don't think these guys are all dumb, and I don't think Randy Carlyle's dumb, and I don't think his assistants were dumb, but somehow that the instruction or the strategy, whatever you want to call it, wasn't getting through.
Absolutely. And, you know, the strange thing, Jeff, is that 48-game mini-season is kind of a blip that, you know, they had a lot of scoring, a lot of depth in scoring, which is hard to do, which they didn't get last year. The defense played all of a sudden in a way they hadn't played in the Ron Wilson era and the first whatever 12 games of the Randy Carlyle era when he took over from Wilson. I mean, their defense had been horrid for a couple of years. It had been ranked, you know, in the bottom echelon for a few seasons before that. So I think that maybe that was part of, I don't want to say caught you by surprise, but it seemed like they had evolved as a team that way in that 48-game season. And that's not what we saw last year. It went back to almost 2 years earlier. And the point is, you can have the talent and you can have all those other things, but like you say, if they're not invested, if there's not a commitment, it's not going to happen. And you really saw that yesterday. And by then, it was kind of too late. You were scrambling at the end. Guys are trying to do individual things to make things happen. Things that happen if you're coaching kids minor hockey in a lot of ways. It was that fundamentally unsound.
This idea of splitting up James Van Riemsdyk and Phil Kessel, how do you feel about that? I mean, I go both ways in this. I'm a big believer that you need, it's good to have that first line. It's good to have, it's almost like having the ace in your starting rotation. To me, the first line, it's good to have those, you know, the group that you can kind of look to. But at the same time, when you look at the Leafs and the difference, the gap between their top end talent and the rest of the forwards, it almost makes sense to split them up, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, Jeff, it's I'm big on, you know, it goes back to Gretzky and Yari Curry, that you have two guys and you're always trying to have be a little bit more flexible with the third guy on a line. But if you have two guys that have a certain chemistry, you stick with it. And those guys have really had it, except after the Olympic break. I mean, they got like zero even strength goals for an inordinate amount of time. I mean, they were a big part of the team going south. They were. So maybe last year would have been the time to have split them sometime during that slide to see if that would have been one of the things that got them going. So certainly in training camp, I think, Jeff, is when you've got to try these types of things. At least dabble with it and give yourself some options as the season goes on so that these are, you know, a little more well thought out and things that you've actually tried a little bit, and see if the balance scoring over two lines is better than the electrifying offense they can give you when they're both on fire.
Well, and I think the thing too, Gord, this is also a reflection, I think, of the fact that in this day and age of a salary cap, if you're a team like the Leafs and you're up against the cap, you're probably not going to be able to add, or it's going to be difficult to add a top line forward, or maybe even a second line forward. You really do have to spread the wealth out a little bit.
Absolutely, and spreading the wealth out, you have to figure out where can Joffre Lupo go back and contribute like he did in that shortened season. I mean, that was a guy on basically a 40-goal pace the previous year, and he was never on the big line last year, and he never really seemed to get going that way, and this gives you that element there, because if you can get a third gun going like that, that's a plus. And also, Nazem Kadri, got to figure out a way, like, you know, if he's going to be a top six guy or whatever, like, what's the best way to get him to the next level? Because we still, it's this incomplete work trying to figure out what level he's at as far as the contract negotiations next year in the offseason, and just being able to contribute to be a key cog for the Maple Leafs up front. So if you move that JVR around, you mentioned the cap things is one thing, but the other thing is, how does it get other guys going that, you know, didn't go as well offensively last year as he did the previous year?
It's interesting. Michael Tracos of the National Post had an item on the line being broken up, and he has a quote from James Van Riemsdyk, who said he sees in Kadri, he sees a Claude Giroux type player, and the quote is, somebody who can get you the puck pretty much where you are. And I first time I've heard anybody compare Nazem Kadri to Claude Giroux, but I think what James Van Riemsdyk is saying is that Kadri's skill set might play pretty well into Van Riemsdyk's skill set.
Well, and especially if JVR is making a comment like that, that, again, when we talk about guys not investing on the defensive style, if guys invest on what line they're playing, like Joffre Lupo wasn't happy where he was playing last year, and I guess a lot of it goes by the numbers, the lack of numbers, but if you've got, you know, JVR being keen about it, that's a plus that way, certainly. And you know, the other one we haven't talked about, but in getting offense, and Peter Holland, boy, he did not get the stats when he was up with the big team, but we talk a lot about the Toronto Marlies. It's been a successful team the last couple of years. This guy was a monster in the Calder Cup playoffs. I mean, he really was. Now, I know it's the AHL, but you still think, okay, if we're looking for somebody else that can help us get points and feed, you know, he's another possibility that way. I mean, he's below the depth chart in Calgary, for example, but I still think he's a guy you've got to entertain in the mix to see, can he just get these lines going? I mean, Tyler Bozak was kind of that way a few years ago. He was moved up there by default in a lot of ways to a top line and kind of grew into the position. So you've got a number of different options that way, and the more options, the better.
I mean, you made a great point there, and I loved your phrase, investing in the line. You really do need that, don't you, from the players? Other people call it buy-in, but you really need that sense of, I like this, I have to make this work. It's important to me, and it's important to the team that it work. You like to hear that. You like to see that from players.
No, absolutely. I thought, being around the Leafs when they weren't winning, okay, and it's like human nature. You had guys that were pissed off what line they were on always, and probably their line mates were just as pissed off that they were on with that guy, right? I mean, losing gets that, and you think, boy, if I was playing with whoever the best center was at the time or whatever it may be, it would be a different story. And when you get guys that, you know, that's a big plus about that. Not guys that are always looking to blame someone doesn't get me the puck or what may be. And, you know, last year I thought a strength of Mason Raymond, Jeff, was that he came and he really played well in different lines. Like Randy Carlyle used him in a lot of different lines early in the season. And he fit in wherever it was. And he's not a Hart Trophy player, but he was a useful guy for 1 year. And when you've got Santorelli now and Booth and Winnick and those kind of guys that are, you know, looking for a bit of a second chance in the NHL, that's another type thing you look at. It's key about balance lines, but guys that are absolutely invested in the line they're playing on.
Gord, it was good of you to do this.
Preseason hockey tonight. Can't wait.
Oh, let it start. Gord Stellick. Take care. Gord Stellick, co-host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game at Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Again, the Leafs and the Philadelphia Flyers get going tonight in London, Ontario. And then the Leafs will be back home tomorrow to play the Philadelphia Flyers. And we'll have hockey on Sportsnet 360 on Tuesday, preseason game between San Jose and Vancouver. And then don't forget Wednesday from 7 to 9:30 p.m. Sportsnet 360. Kraft Hockeyville visits Sylvan Lake, Alberta. The Arizona Coyotes against the Calgary Flames in Sylvan Lake, home of Lyndon Rush. And we'll have preseason hockey for in Sportsnet 360 on Thursday as well. 9 o'clock Vancouver at Calgary. Friday, Sportsnet 1. We'll have the Leafs and Sabres from Buffalo. And Sportsnet 1 will follow that with a preseason game between the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks. So lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of hockey ahead for you. Don't forget, by the way, you got to check out the Rogers Game Center. Might as well check it out now because you're going to be using it during the regular season. So I found this interesting, the fact that the Maple Leafs have allowed their coaches, their assistant coaches, to be interviewed. You're probably sitting there shaking your head and going, why the hell would you find that interesting? Well, the Leafs in recent years haven't made their assistant coaches readily available to members of the press. There's been a changeover in the public relations and the media relations department of the team. I don't know. That may have something to do with it. My sense is this probably comes from Brendan Shanahan's direction. But, I mean, I can remember wanted to talk to Keith Acton about how, and this is when Ron Wilson was coach, how they were working with Mikhail Grabowski in the faceoff circle. I mean, nothing. It was an off-day story, right? And honest to God, you'd think that you were trying to, you know, you think you were trying to steal state secrets. And that's not always the way it is. I mean, there are teams where the assistant coaches are sort of off boundaries or off bounds. But by and large, most teams, and it depends on the head coach. Head coaches like to sort of be the ultimate filter. But there are a lot of teams that will allow you to have access to the assistant coaches. And sometimes you're talking to assistant coaches off the record. So, but I found this really interesting that the Leafs, with this new defensive system, running their assistant coach, Peter Horacek, out there. And Peter Horacek, we've had him in this show, a tremendous interview, very smart guy. More to the point, a smart guy who can talk to dumber people like me without making it sound like he's talking down to you, which is a huge asset to have if you're an assistant coach. I find this fascinating that Peter Horacek is all over the papers and explaining this new defensive system that the Leafs are going to put in place, and we'll see it tonight for the first time against the Philadelphia Flyers, although obviously it depends who's in the lineup. I mean, you're not going to want to judge this new defensive system based on how a bunch of guys who won't be with the Leafs at the start of the year handle it. But I want to get your take on this conversation, this tone we're seeing out of Leafs camp. Very businesslike. You know, we had the nonsense with Phil Kessel and the anonymous minor league coaches. Phil Kessel actually kind of disarmed it in a way with that comment about I've only been on the ice about 10 times during the summer. What are you looking for from the Leafs in the preseason? Like, as a hockey fan, how do you watch these preseason games? What do you look for? What interests you? Is there a particular player you're interested in seeing? Maybe you're interested in seeing this newfangled defensive system and how it's going to work out. But I've always wondered that. As a fan, what do you look for in these games? Do you look for anything in these games? And do you think, especially this year, because Randy Carlyle's got new assistant coaches, and we all know that Randy Carlyle's job is, you know, it's on the line. I mean, that's no secret. His support system, i.e. his assistant coaches, I mean, they were fired from underneath him. I mean, the message could not be clearer to Randy Carlyle. So what do you look for in these games? Are you going to be looking for something that shows you that it's going to be different this year? Rocky and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Rocky.
I would say probably two defensemen, Jake Gardiner and Morgan Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Riley's coming off the rookie year, and Gardiner, he had a very bad start. However, he had a strong finish towards the end of the season. So, and just now, we just what Bellick was saying, how Gardiner is having a good start going towards the season, and I think I really believe that Jake Gardiner might have a breakout year. I believe. I think he could be the difference maker. If the Leafs make it to the playoffs, he could be the difference defense-wise, because last year the Leafs were pretty bad defensively, and with the new system change and everything, I think Gardiner could make a difference.
You know, I could not believe last year that the Leafs were as incompetent defensively as they showed at times. I failed to believe that NHL players could look as bad as the Leafs did. And that really did make me think that somehow the message wasn't getting through, or that the message that was getting through, you know, was not the right message. And that's what I'm going to be looking for in the preseason. I don't pretend that I'm an X's and O's guy when it comes to hockey. I mean, I'm not. I don't know enough about the game to be that way. But I'm going to be watching for a sense of organization in their own end. I'm going to be watching for how often the other team has that clear shot on goal. How often the other team has the puck. I want to see a sense of organization starting at the back end and going out with the Leafs. Because I understand people say you've got to back check, the forwards have to back check. To me, it still starts with your defenseman. Team defense is a great concept, but to me, it still starts with your defenseman. If your defensemen aren't any good, it doesn't matter how hard or if your forwards back check. The onus still has to be in the defense corps. Adam and Milton, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Leafs start their preseason schedule tonight. What are you going to be looking for? What's the thing that has got your attention going into the preseason?
It's not actually one thing. It's one player, and that's Jonathan Bernier. He came in here last year and put on a pretty good show. I think fans have got a lot of high expectations for him this year. He's kind of the one goalie in years that we can kind of jump on to, that we're kind of, you know, have a lot of confidence in this guy. And it just seems that if he comes out and doesn't perform to the level that he did last year, even better, no matter how good we are at scoring goals or no matter how good we are at our own end, if Jonathan Bernier isn't Jonathan Bernier or better, the Leafs are in trouble. Kind of just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I don't know how much you can tell, Adam, about a goaltender from, I was going to say spring training. I'm already looking ahead. When is spring training, Travis? When does that start? February 20th? No. I don't know how much you can tell about a goaltender from training camp. I really don't. I think we know enough about Jonathan Bernier. I think we have an idea of what he is. But Randy Carlyle has said that the goaltending situation is going to be 1A and 1B between Bernier and Reimer. And I tend to take him at his word. I don't want to read too much into who gets what playing time in the preseason. You know, to me, it's when the season starts, is the goalie ready to go? I have to tell you the truth. I don't even really concentrate or focus on the goaltending during preseason games, especially in this team. Because I think we've got a pretty good handle on what those guys are. I'm going to be interested in just seeing the sense of organization around this team, because I didn't see that at times last year. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that line broken up. It's going to be interesting to see who Phil Kessel and Joffrey Loop will end up playing with. But I'm really more interested in seeing how organized the Leafs are on their own end, because I think that's where it has to start. Sean and Colberg, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
JB, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Sean. What up?
Well, listen. Listen. I got one little comment to make here, too. What's a guy from Winnipeg who's a Habs fan wearing a Leafs sweater?
Oh, you saw that.
I missed the trick, Jeff.
Sean, they wouldn't let me have a Jets jersey. I asked for a Jets jersey. They wouldn't let me have it. But you'll be proud of me. You know what I did after the picture? I took the shirt off and I dropped it in the floor.
I thought you had a Habs jersey underneath. I could have seen some red peeking out.
No, I dropped it on the floor.
Hey, Jeff, here's what I think about the Leafs. This is what I'm looking for. One, I'm wondering, is he going to finally, like, Colton or McLaren, as far as I'm I don't know about who your team, they're not on my team.
Nah, they're not anywhere near my team.
No. And I'll tell you another thing. David Clarkson, he is not, you know why that second line's not working good? Is David Clarkson on that line. He's a third line guy at best.
Oh boy, I'll tell you, I agree with you in that, Sean. Unfortunately, he's being played like a second liner, but I agree with you totally on that. I agree with you totally on that. Unfortunately, in this team, he has to be a second liner. Unfortunately, in this team, that's the least given his salary that the Leafs can expect from him. But yeah, he's clearly under a lot of pressure. And you know what? He might be the guy who needs a really good camp to remove a bit of the stain of last year. He might be the guy who needs to have a good preseason, because he is that close. He is that close to becoming the fans' whipping boy. I mean, that close. Mike in Mississauga, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go ahead, Mike.
Good morning. I don't know who was keeping the stats last year, but if you read the summaries in the games, you'd see giveaways, and it would show like 10 total giveaways by the Leafs. And if you watch them in person, they had 10 per period. So I think they have to be taught, like we were taught 100 years ago at St. Mike's, where I played, always pass the puck to a guy with the same sweaters you're wearing. And the worst offender was enough. Just wonder how you feel about that.
I think a lot of Dion Phaneuf's issues will be cured by a new system. I mean, Dion Phaneuf to me is, you know, I made my peace with Dion Phaneuf a long time ago. Dion Phaneuf is an okay part of my number one defense pairing. I'm fine with him. I like the minutes he logs. I tend to see a lot more positive in his game than negative. And I have no problem looking past the C in his jersey. We've had that discussion before. I don't blame him for being named captain. And to me, that's a large part of public dissatisfaction with Dion Phaneuf comes from that damned letter. If he didn't have that letter, not everything would be fine, but I think people would have a different point of view of Dion Phaneuf. I really think Brian Burke did him absolutely no favors making him captain. I think this new structure, based on what we're hearing about it, from Peter Horacek will play right, will play into Dion Phaneuf's hands. Because I think far too often last year, the pass that he had to make was far too long. To me, it's a little bit like soccer. It's okay to have the odd long pass, but you want to work things in little triangles. You want to have as short a path as possible to your teammate. And if Peter Horacek's system does what it's designed to do, it should help Dion Phaneuf's game. Speaking of soccer, Toronto FC thumped Chivas USA yesterday 3-0. Manchester United blew a 3-1 lead to Leicester City in the Premiership. Craig Forrest of Soccer Central will join us. We'll take a look back at the weekend in footy. And we'll ask a question about Toronto FC. I mean, Michael Bradley called out just about everybody last week. Fans, officials, in some way teammates. I think you saw the desired response yesterday. We'll ask Craig Forrest, is that the type of result that can propel TFC into the playoffs? Craig Forrest will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're back. Baseball Central at noon is just a few minutes away because it's only 18 minutes till noon. Joe Siddle will be sitting in alongside me. The Jays starting the final week of the regular season with the first of four games against the Seattle Mariners and Canadian-born pitcher James Paxton. The Mariners are attempting to make the playoffs. The Jays are playing out the string. And the Baltimore Orioles will be in town for three games on the weekend to wrap up the season. See if Toronto FC can extend their season a bit, shall we? Toronto FC beat Chivas USA 3-0 yesterday at BMO Field. We all know, of course, the situation surrounding TFC right now. Relatively new coach, still waiting for the return of Jermaine Defoe, waiting to see how much Jermaine Defoe actually plays when he's here. Waiting to see what Jermaine Defoe's mindset is. Michael Bradley, I thought in the past week, really stepped up and said some things that needed to be said. And I think doing the things you would expect of a leader and you would expect of your captain. And I would think for a lot of reasons, TFC has to be pretty pleased with their result on Sunday. Craig Forrest of Soccer Central joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Obviously, Craig, results are important right now for Toronto FC, but every now and then it's also good to dominate a team, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, that's for sure. And even though Chivas is a poor team at the moment, and their existence is certainly in doubt, but at least it was a must win for them, for sure, for Toronto FC. And it was nice to see that they scored some goals and gave them some confidence moving forward, because they do have, what, they got six games left. They got three of those are at home. All of those are winnable. Portland, Houston, and Montreal. And the away game is going to be a little tougher, but there's still points there for them to pick up. And it's hopeful for them for sure.
When do you think we'll know about Jermaine Defoe? Like, what do you see happening here?
Well, first of all, I mean, Jermaine Defoe is an old teammate of mine at West Ham when he was younger, and know him quite well. But the whole situation with his injury and getting treatment back in the United Kingdom, this is a player that was signed for several million dollars a year, and he should be here in Toronto. and not over in England trying to negotiate some kind of move. And that tried to, you know, they tried to do make that happen before the window shut. You know, when you're making millions of dollars, you should feel a little guilty. You should be on the bench sitting there supporting your team as much as you possibly can. And you are the face of this club and you should be here. And there should be more communication between him and the club and knowing exactly what's going on.
He is, I mean, he's such a transcendent player for this league, though. If he shows up here and wants to play, I mean, is there any doubt in your mind that TFC would be able to, you know, that the team would accept him back, the players would accept him back with open arms?
Well, that's a good question. I think so. He's a game winner, and I think if he gets his mind right, which when he gets on the field, he puts it all in. Like, there's no question about that. He's done very well. But again, there should be more clarity about what's going on about, you know, his injury and when he's going to be available and is he going to come back? And he should be more vocal about, yeah, I'm coming back. I'm coming back to help this team make the playoffs. And it's been very quiet and very, very frustrating for the fans once again.
Yeah. And I think that, that's probably one of the reasons that it was important that Michael Bradley step up the way he did off the field and also on the field.
Absolutely. You know, they fire the coaching staff, and you know, Beznichenko and was, you know, instrumental in a lot of the signings. And you know, yeah, on paper it's great, but you have to know when you sign a player, whether it's Michael Bradley or Jermaine Defoe, that this player is going to be here, and that these players are going to be here, and they're going to be the face of this team, and know exactly what's expected of them. And when a player like Defoe decides, you know, he doesn't want to stay here necessarily, well, you should know that beforehand, that it might be a risk, especially for the millions of dollars that you're outlaying.
Craig Forrest joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I guess one of the other talking points out of the weekend, well, there was two main ones in the Premiership. First of all, Frank Lampard coming off the bench to score against his old team and quite properly not celebrating the goal. But also, Craig, that the Manchester United's meltdown against Leicester City, they spent a lot of money, obviously, addressing the midfield, addressing their forward line, but they just aren't good enough in the back, are they?
No, they're not. You're right there. They spent, you know, in the attacking zone, they've got a lot of really good players, and Di Maria is a great signing, but it's all about balance and getting it right, and they really didn't do enough for me in the back. They picked up Rojo, which... We covered him quite a bit for Sporting, and he was a liability at times and made quite a few mistakes. And for the money that they spent, I don't think Sporting I think they got the best out of that deal. Phil Jones is injured, but Luke Shaw is injured. But for the most part at the back, you're relying on, what, Blackett, who's a 20-year-old kid who got sent off on the weekend. Just no protection at the back. Just the balance is all off. And for a team like Man United, for the first time in history to lose a two-goal lead in the Premier League is an all-time low. I think the guy with the biggest smile on his face is probably David Moyes.
he's probably sitting there saying, maybe I'm not the worst manager in the history of the game.
He didn't spend as much money as Van Gaal has.
What? I mean, the transfer window isn't... You know, it's not going to be open for a while. Can Man U do anything? Can Louis van Gaal do anything tactically to help his back line? I mean, obviously, getting Phil Jones back will help. At some point, Luke Shaw will be ready to play. But Craig, even Phil Jones is okay. But they still, to me, you still haven't addressed the absence of Vidic and Ferdinand. And you got another month or so to wait. 2 months until the window opens again. That's a lot of matches that you could be losing.
Well, that's right. If you're looking at, I mean, they're not going to get relegated, but they're certainly not going to be challenging for the top four the way that they're playing right now. And you're right, they haven't replaced Vidic and Rio, and that goes really back to, you know, if you're going to criticize Alex Ferguson for anything, maybe, I mean, a brilliant manager and one of the best of all time, is that he probably didn't address that before he retired. Maybe he knew something was coming. Maybe they knew that's for the time he wanted to retire, because Rio was getting old, Vidic was getting old, and they needed to replace him, and they didn't. And they didn't realize probably how important those two players were for years and years. And again, you got a kid that's 20 years old, and Blackett, that's playing in the position. And, you know, at 20, it's pretty tough for anybody. And you're on a big stage, and you're playing for Man United. That's a lot of responsibility.
Always good to talk to you, Craig.
Thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
Take care. That is Craig Forrest of Soccer Central. Catch him every Saturday and Sunday morning and part of your footy coverage. It's Toronto FC, a 3-0 win over Chivas USA. And a step forward towards the playoffs, I guess. And as Craig Forrest said, we'll now await the return of Jermaine Defoe and see where his head is, see where his body is, first of all, physically, but also see where his head is. And because I think it's pretty clear, and Craig pointed out, guy's making a lot of money from Toronto FC, and it was really odd to see him rehabilitating from his injury over in England as opposed to being here, as opposed to being on the bench supporting your teammates. That's it for the Blair Show today. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll have the Leafs preseason game to talk about. I'm sure there'll be some sort of crisis that'll come out of tonight's game. I don't even know who's playing, but I don't even know who the Leafs are taking with them to London, but there will be a crisis. There will definitely be a crisis. We'll deal with that, and we'll have more Jays conversation as well. Don't forget, Jays and Seattle Mariners, your last chance to see the Jays is here. They start a first of a four-game series tonight. Then the Orioles are in for three games at the Rogers Center. The Seattle Mariners will have James Paxton, a Canadian, on the mound, pitching for a playoff berth. And in point of fact, James Paxton could also eliminate the Blue Jays or have a role in the Blue Jays' mathematical elimination today. And if you want to figure out why that's ironic, significant, whatever you want to call it, take a look at my item on sportsnet.ca. I'll tell you a little bit about James Paxton, how he got to the Mariners, and the tie-in with the Blue Jays. But for now, that's it for the Blair Show. Baseball Central at noon, right around the corner. Joe Siddall and yours truly. Talk in a few minutes.